This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
I want to see you in the sun.
We're here at the Mother Earth News Fair with Dan Chiris. He's the director of the Evergreen Institute. He is an expert on sustainability. He's the author of numerous popular books and articles, and we're going to talk about some of those. We're going to be talking about solar electricity for you, whether we are entering a new energy revolution, maybe how you could heat your home if we get enough time with solar power. I'm interested in all of those things. I'm planning a little bit of a homestead for myself. Dan Chiris, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
No, thank you. It's good to be here.
So you're giving several workshops, are you, at the fair?
I'm doing one workshop on heating your home with solar and another one on solar, you know, providing electricity through solar electricity. And then I'm doing the keynote. The sustainable energy revolution has begun.
All right. And how long have you been doing this?
Oh, I started in solar back in 1976. I put my very first solar system on my first home in 1977, and I've been doing it ever since then.
Well, I went back to land homesteading around 1979. We lived for 10 years without electricity. I looked into solar at the time and, wow, you know, like a 50-watt panel was huge and it was $3,000. I couldn't do it at the time. Now it's a lot different. How kind of expensive is it? Can people really do solar now?
Absolutely. The prices have just plummeted. You know, back in the early 70s, the price was $75 a watt. Today it's 75 cents a watt. It's come down that much. And it's gotten to the point where even without any tax credits, we can produce electricity from solar systems that's price parity with the local utilities in areas in the East Coast and the West Coast. In other words, you buy a solar system, install a solar system, and you calculate the 30-year cost of electricity from that system. It's the same as a lot of people are paying in the East Coast and the West Coast of the United States without any subsidies. And it's actually pretty close to the price we're paying in big cities throughout the country, maybe just a little bit more. Now you add that 30% federal tax credit and we're kicking butt. I mean, we're actually producing electricity 3 or 4 cents a kilowatt hour cheaper than you're paying, say, in Kansas City or St. Louis or certainly Chicago, any of the large cities. So, and not much more than you'd pay out in a rural area from a rural electric cooperative. So the price has plummeted, and we think it's only going to go down more. So it's a great buy. I mean, it's a terrific buy. And believe me, we've been waiting for a lot of years to be able to say that because it's always been, well, don't worry about the price. You know, we're doing this for the environment, which is great. You know, for some of us, it works really, really well. But for a lot of customers, they worry about the price. And so it's been a lot of years that we've been hoping to be able to say, hey, we're competitive, in many cases, cheaper than electricity from nuclear power plants and coal-fired power plants. And that's exciting news. I mean, that is really exciting news.
Well, that's the price of power now. And we know what's happening with nuclear power. Those plants are aging and they have no plan for their waste. Don't get me started on all that. And then we look at the price of oil. It's gone up. It's going to go even more. We're not making any more of it. And, you know, I just think that if you calculate it and it works on the prices now, you're going to be way ahead 10 years from now when the cost of electricity just goes up and up and up. And then we have all these natural storms, climate change, things happening. You've still got power when everybody else is in the dark. That's another thing we ought to talk about is reliability.
Well, you're absolutely right about the cost today is not representative of what the cost of power from the utilities today is not representative of what it's going to be in 5 years. And nationwide, the last 35 years, you look at electrical costs in the United States, the last 35 years, it's increased 4.4% per year. So if you're paying 10 cents a kilowatt hour this year, you're going to pay 4 or 5% higher next year and the next year and the next year. In a lot of areas, it's twice that. If you look at in St. Louis, for example, the local utility Ameren has increased its rate at least 10% a year for the last 6 years. If they do it again next year, that means it will have doubled in 7 years. And that's what most customers say. Yeah, I mean, I can produce solar for 7.5 cents and I'm paying 10 cents for my utility. And I know where that's going. But the solar is a fixed cost. And that's why it's very popular with businesses, school districts because they say, hey, that cost of power is increasing every year, and it's hurting businesses and people on fixed incomes. And they go, well, I can pay for it now, and I'm assured that basically that same rate for 30 years, because that's what you're doing. You're prepaying your electric bill.
Plus, socially, we're losing so much power in the transmission system, and our transmission system is really old, whereas with solar power, there it is right where you need to use it. It's there with no transmission costs, and I think as a society, we're going to have to start counting those things.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, there is one thing that we need to correct is that if you put a solar system on your house and it's grid-tied, you know, in other words, you have no batteries involved in that system, when the grid goes down, whether it's, say, a lightning storm or a tornado or a hurricane, whatever, so do you. And that's one of the things people need to understand is that if you're just putting in grid tied with no batteries, the systems will shut off if the grid shuts down. So we don't have that quite as much energy independence as people think. You can put in a battery system as a backup. The grid can go down and you'll switch over seamlessly to battery operation. You won't even know it happened. I mean, you might go to the neighbors next door and find out they're out of electricity because, you know, a lightning bolt struck a local transformer or something like that, or a tree came down across the line, and you're just over there doing your thing. Your computer's working, your TV's working, your lights are working, your neighbors are all in the dark. So that's the thing that people need to be careful about, is that we do have that one problem with grid-tied systems, is that because they have the potential to feed power onto the grid, as a safety measure, when the grid goes down, they have to shut down.
So do the utilities make it so you have to choose one way or another? Can I have my batteries and still sell some electricity to the utility? I can't do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you're speaking on solar power right now. We've got a 120-watt panel up on the roof of mobile studio, and we do have batteries up in the front, so it's solar-powered right now.
Yeah, you can go grid-tied with battery backup. That's what it's called. And so your batteries are there just in case something happens to the grid. It's just your backup system. But most of the time, if you're producing surplus, it's feeding back onto the grid. Your meter's running back. And then if you need it at night, it's yours for free. You need it the next day, it's yours for free. You need it 2 days later, it's yours for free.
Well, to me, the other whole secret to this, Dan Chiris, is that we've got to really cut back on the amount of electricity we're using. We've got to have the right appliances that use really low energy. We've got to have the right lighting, all of that. Tell us a little bit about how that fits in with the solar vision.
Well, you know, to me, it's just crucial, absolutely crucial. It still is cheaper to save energy than to generate. Even though the price of solar has come down so much, it's still cheaper to put in an energy-efficient light bulb. Or if you're upgrading, if you're buying a new refrigerator, if you're buying a new television set or washing machine, it's still a better investment to go out and buy the most efficient ones on the market. And that will lower your overall demand, which means you need a smaller system, which means you save money. So I'm a real strong advocate of efficiency. In fact, if I were appointed the energy czar for the United States, as much as I love solar and wind, I'd be putting an awful lot of money into efficiency. It's the fastest, the least expensive, and truly the most sustainable way of, in a sense, producing power. Because if you save, you know, if you're saving 100 kilowatt hours a year or a month or whatever, that's, you know, essentially you've freed up 100 kilowatt hours that someone else can use. So it really is a much better solution from the standpoint of sustainability. It's efficiency first. That's what I teach all my students who come to the Evergreen Institute to learn how to install solar systems and sell solar systems, is the most important thing to do for your customers is help them cut back on demand. Cut that down. It means a smaller system. That saves resources. That saves energy, because it does take energy to make all these systems. So efficiency first, efficiency first, efficiency first.
Got it. You know, a couple of my friends who are off-grid have said to me, Alex, if you're thinking about doing this, you should start with water heating. That's, you know, a good place to go, because you can get a lot of bang for your buck with solar water heating. Are you involved in advising on that too?
I do. In fact, it's really kind of one of the hidden secrets in the solar world, is solar hot water systems, they're typically called solar thermal systems, designed to capture heat from the sun and, you know, make heat to either heat a home or, more commonly, just to heat water, domestic hot water systems. It's one of the best bargains out there. They have a real high rate of return. especially if you're heating now with electricity or propane. Those are the two most expensive ways to heat water. So if you're currently heating with propane or electricity, it's actually much cheaper to go to solar thermal, solar hot water systems. It really is one of the best buys. They're relatively inexpensive systems. The return on your investment is typically around 10%. So you're, it's a really decent investment. And again, from an environmental standpoint, it's a great investment. Absolutely. Solar thermal, solar hot water systems first. But boy, it just doesn't get much traction. Solar electricity is so much sexier. People are all turned on to that one. They don't hear enough about solar thermal systems and understand that they are such a tremendously good buy.
Well, you go down to Mexico and you look at some of the public housing that's been built, all of them have those big black sort of concrete towers on the top because that's their hot water source right there. There's no sense paying for it when you've got it right from the sun. But I've talked to people even in Canada who are getting all of their hot water from the sun. They need to supplement it in the winter months because there just isn't enough sun at that point, but they still have solar thermal systems that can run during the cold weather. They don't freeze up. There's ways of doing it, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. It's not uncommon to get 70 to 80% of your heat from the sun on a solar thermal system. In fact, most people just shut off their backup heat, hot water system in the summer months, May, June, July, August, September, October, 5-6 months a year. When I lived in Denver, that's what I did. I had a solar hot water system for my domestic water, and I just shut the backup. There was a gas heater that was a backup system. Just shut that off for 5-6 months a year, and I just lived entirely off solar hot water. But so, yeah, it's really doable. It's very, very doable. And the systems are really quite sophisticated. What you talked about in Mexico, those are called solar batch heating systems. And there are some really nice, sophisticated systems. In Mexico, you just find a big tank on the roof, a black tank. Very, very simple systems. And that's ideal in the southern United States, southern Texas, Florida, all of Florida. You should see systems like that all over, these batch heating systems. But there are much prettier ones, with a flat plate collector that will hold 60 or 80 gallons of hot water. And you could virtually get all your hot water in a climate like that from those systems. Now, we wouldn't want a batch heater up north where we have freezing weather. But in those systems, we have a what's called a drain back system. It circulates water through the collector on the roof. And then as soon as the sun goes down, the system shuts down, all that water drains back into a storage tank. So there's no chance of it freezing. And that's what we have at our place in Missouri now, is a drain back system, and works beautifully. There are a lot of other types too that will protect from freezing. So you don't need it. Solar is used in a lot more places than in, say, the desert Southwest. The solar thermal systems are good virtually anywhere in the United States.
Right, and in Canada or Australia, of course. Australia is just a hotbed of solar energy. And Europe, Germany, look, Germany is getting, I think it's about 25% of their power now from solar, and they're not a southern country, really.
No, Germany is a climate about like Missouri. It's not really terribly sunny. It's kind of in the middle. It's 4.7 peak sun hours a day, so it's not really a solar capital, but definitely Germany's a leader. I think it's 20% is what I hear. But there's some states now in the U.S., Iowa, North Dakota, Colorado, all get 20% of their electricity from the sun, which is phenomenal. I mean, you think about that. That is huge. And that's happened just in the last 10 years.
And Arizona's getting about 2%. Yeah. I just spoke to someone there who said it's being run on coal power in what should be the solar capital of the United States. It's bizarre.
I actually misspoke. It's those states that I mentioned. It's 20% of their energy from wind and sun, not just sun.
Right.
Large wind systems, yeah.
Okay. Now, you're going to be talking about whether the energy revolution has begun. Can you give us a clue? Has it?
Oh, it's here. This is one of the most exciting things that's happened. Some of us have been in this since the 70s, and we've been, the excuse has always been, their systems are expensive, but, the traditional ways of creating electricity, coal and nuclear, they don't take into account the external cost. What you pay for your electricity doesn't take into account all that carbon dioxide that's emitted from a coal-fired power plant, or the nuclear waste that's blowing around on the western regions of Colorado, where they where they mine for nuclear fuels. It doesn't account for those economic externalities. Now we can say that with a dramatic decrease in the price of solar electricity, we're very cost competitive, and we're seeing a dramatic increase in the world. The United States now gets 10% of its energy from renewables. That's hydro, solar, and wind. And in fact, wind and solar are the two fastest growing sources of energy in the world. I mean, it's just phenomenal. China's a leader in solar and wind, especially wind energy. So the revolution has begun. We're on track for enormous increases in the amount of energy we get from renewable. It would not surprise me that within 50 years, we are getting 50, maybe 80% of our energy from renewables. It's growing that fast. So if the growth sustains itself, if we don't have political changes that take us back, you know, to the dark ages, if we can keep this momentum moving, you know, we're staged for some dramatic growth. And it's already occurring. And if it looks like it will continue to occur.
Well, we desperately need it. We've got climate change just biting and coming up behind us in a terrible way, all sorts of extreme weather events. So we've got to make that change for a lot of reasons, for economic reasons, and I think for social reasons. To have a more distributed power system would be kind of nice, as opposed to monopoly utilities that we've had for the past 100 and some odd years.
There are many, many reasons for going solar, and climate change is one very serious one. It's not when is it going to occur, it's here. And as you alluded to, we're getting hammered by climate change. These tornadoes, violent hurricanes, really high energy tornadoes, it's all this bad weather, crazy climate, it's all a result of our current use of fossil fuels. There's just no question about it, you know. Anybody who says any different doesn't really know what they're talking about. They're just repeating the party line, you know, seriously. They're repeating what they've been told, but all the science is solid behind climate change. And yeah, there's a little tiny, tiny bit of the climate change that's natural, but most of what's happening to our climate is a result of the release of CO2, primarily from the combustion of fossil fuels, and part of it from deforestation. You know, we're losing that carbon sink, the trees that absorb CO2. That's really important. We don't talk about that very much, but that's still a huge factor in the rising levels of CO2. And then, of course, there's methane from cattle and other sources of greenhouse gases. So it's very serious, it's very real, and we are paying a huge price. I mean, Katrina alone was $250 billion price tag for that. And that hurricane, when it crossed the tip of southern Florida, it was a Category 1. When it got into the warm waters of the Gulf, heated by climate change, turned into what, Category 4 or 5, and caused all that damage, we're paying for it now, you know.
Well, Dan Shiras, we have the answers, and you have many of the answers built up over a lifetime of working away at this. I would like you to tell our listeners about, say, two books that you've piled all this good info into.
Probably the number one book would be The Homeowner's Guide to Renewable Energy. It's out in a brand new edition, so it's been thoroughly updated. If you're looking at either building a brand new house or even an office building, you know, a lot of these, the book is written for homeowners, but it really applies to business as well. But if you're looking at building a new home or a business, if you're looking at retrofitting your home for energy, it covers everything. It's a good introductory level. It tells you a lot about efficiency, the stuff we talked about earlier, the importance of that, and what you can do to make your building, either retrofit it or when you build a new building, make it just as absolutely efficient as possible. I mean, we can build a house right now that from the start uses 75% less energy. I mean, how cool is that? To just by building right, investing a little bit more up front, 75% less energy. Essentially, it's free energy for life, and then power the remainder with solar and wind. And so the rest of the book talks about the different types of systems. There's a chapter on solar electricity, you know, basics of solar electricity, a chapter on solar thermal systems, a chapter on how we heat our homes passively, you know, without furnaces, without, you know, how we can back off on our use of natural gas for furnaces. So how can we heat our homes naturally using natural forces, sunlight, and how do we cool our homes passively as well? And that's an often overlooked subject as well, as we're always thinking about heating homes, but for a lot of us, our cooling bills are higher than our heating bills. So how do you cool that home naturally without the environmental impacts of air conditioning, for example. So there's a chapter on geothermal. It's a really, really good introduction to that subject and good, solid information. It's called The Homeowner's Guide to Renewable Energy. And I know I've got a lot of other books. If you're either one of my most popular books is called Power from the Sun. And that's a book just on solar electricity, which is probably the hottest renewable energy source right now for homeowners and businesses. And that's a really, really good introduction. It's written for the layperson, so you don't need a PhD in physics or, you know, need a degree in electrical engineering to understand that book. That's what I've done my whole career. I am a scientist, and I've spent my whole career taking complex technical information and translating it accurately into terms that people can understand. That's what that book's all about. That's another important reading if you're thinking about going solar electricity.
What scientific training do you have? I did not know this about you.
Oh, I actually have a PhD from the University of Kansas School of Medicine. And my PhD is in reproductive physiology. That's how I started out in this business. I was going to get an MD, PhD, and, you know, go that route. Something that still fascinates me. In fact, I even have a human biology textbook out there, but a college-level textbook in human biology. But three-quarters of the way through my graduate degree, I got really interested in the environment. There were no PhDs in environmental science at the time. This was back in the early 70s. So I just decided I'd finish up my PhD in reproductive physiology, and then I started reading voraciously everything I could about the environment. And then I got a teaching position at the University of Colorado, and my department chair was so generous. She said, you know, Dan, here's what you have to teach, and whatever else you want to do, you're free to do it. Well, she shouldn't have told me that, because I just started pouring through books on environmental science and energy and green building and basically trained myself in those areas. But the scientific background that I got, the science training that I got, has been really helpful in understanding, you know, the technical aspects of solar and wind and green building and so on.
So where do people find the Evergreen Institute, and where do they find you? Do you have a blog as well?
Well, I do. The Evergreen Institute, I'll start there, is evergreeninstitute.org. And there's a good amount of information just on the website. And on the right column, there's just good resources on solar. So it's evergreeninstitute.org. And I do have a blog. I have two blogs. I'm doing one right now on building a net zero energy home through Mother Earth News. So you can find it at the Mother Earth News blog site, or you can just type in Dan Chiris' Net Zero Energy Home into whatever search engine you're using. This is Dan Chiris' Net Zero Energy Home, and that'll take you right to it. And I have another one, too. Now that I'm up there in years, I've started to reflect on life, and I actually wrote a book called Things I Learned Too Late in Life. And so I've got a blog through Mother Earth News called Dan Chiris on Loving Life, and it's a kind of a fun little blog with lessons about sustaining ourselves. You know, I've been focused all along about how we sustain, you know, build sustainable homes and sustainable energy and all gardening and all that stuff. And it, just as I get older and more reflective, I've started this whole kind of new venture. And so it's Dan Chiris on Loving Life.
I'm going to read that blog because I'm kind of at the same state myself. You know, I was a doomer for a little bit too long, and now I'm thinking, we just have this one life, but I've got grandchildren too. I want it to be good for them, but I want everybody to have a livable life and enjoy it. And there is enjoyment there to be had.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we're so much more effective if we come at this thing with love. And I know that may sound corny to some people, but you think about it. I mean, I was kind of an angry young man for a long time because I saw what was happening to our planet. And it just made me angry, furious with what we were doing. But over the years, I've learned that, you know, a loving heart is the truest wisdom. And if we approach these things with love and compassion, we become a lot less fanatical. We become a lot more easy to listen to and to understand. If people get that you're not browbeating them, but rather you're inviting them to this world that really has many of the same goals they're after. I mean, let's face it, I don't care what side of the political spectrum on, we're all fathers and mothers and grandparents, and we all want a better world for our children. Even though we fundamentally differ on political ideologies, there are a lot of things that we want together, and a clean environment is part of that. And I don't know how to say this, except like environmental care is the ultimate form of self-care. You know, if we all get that, if we all understand that environmental protection is really a precondition for economic success for a nation. I mean, if you undermine your resource base, you're undermining your future economics. Solar energy is a fantastic economic resource. So if we can get people on the same page, and not through angst, though, and not through anger and angst and name-calling, but rather just come from a place of understanding, of compassion, and of love, we've got a better chance of making this all happen. You know, I always tell my audiences that the environment is the source of all our resources. You know, the air we breathe, the water we drink, you know, the plastic we use in our world actually comes from oil, which is ancient marine organisms, algae. Everything comes from our environment. And if we could get everybody to understand that fundamental truth that the environment is the source of all our resources and hence the source of our well-being and the source of our economic well-being, what a world this would be. Imagine if every political leader just got that when they're in third grade, you know, before they become political leaders. And I use that word in quotation marks. But if every politician, every governor, every congresswoman, congressman, senator, mayor, business executive got that idea that, hey, this isn't, you know, about protecting pretty places for bird watchers and backpackers, this thing called environmental protection. It's not this kooky, oh, those crazy environmental tree huggers. Hey, that's true, and I'm not denigrating that at all. It's really important. You know, we have places to enjoy, but it's really our economic prosperity. Our well-being is all tied up in protecting the environment, the earth, and its resources.
Dan Chiris, it's been a pleasure meeting you on Radio EcoShock.
It's been a pleasure being here. Thanks for having me.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.